Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
You are listening to Mist Apex, Room 10F1. Welcome to Mist Apex Podcast, powered by SpannersReady.com. We live F1. Downforce Radio, the nation's motorsport station. Badger GP, F1 isn't boring. And Summers.co.uk, making F1 tech easier to understand. Today's episode is called I Am the Gatekeeper. I'm your host, Spanners Ready, and I'm joined by the gatekeeper of Room 10F1, Game Master Ryan Ferret Ferris. Merry Christmas, Ryan.
And Merry Christmas to you, Spanners.
Are you all set? Are you all set to be the custodian of all that is hellish about Formula One?
I live in a world of doom and gloom and darkness, so, you know, I got to be the gatekeeper of the worst room in the world.
The worst room in the Formula One world. For those of you just finding us, we are an independent podcast hosted by SpannersReady.com, also proud to be on the Downforce radio feed. We aim to bring you your race reviews before your Monday morning commute. We might be wrong, but we're first. This show is safe for work. No naughty words here. We're keeping it clean, so you can play this with kids in the background, or in the car, or at work. Okay, Ryan, tell us the game we're playing today on Christmas Day.
I am the gatekeeper of Room 10F1. Ooh. I shall decide, and me alone, what passes through these gates.
They have to convince you that it's horrible enough to be allowed in. Okay, so they will tell us their proposal within the categories we've given them and try and convince Ryan that these items should be erased from F1 history to remain only in the darkness of the most evil room in motorsport. We will grill them, the chat room, the opposition teams, and Ryan and I on their choices, and only if they are able to justify themselves will we allow the choices to pass.
Here's a warning. Only the most gruesome and horrific things will enter the room of Room 10F1. Good luck.
Okay, Ryan, let's meet the teams. Introducing the first team, which is the Clock Dodgers. And we call them this because neither of them have a real job. From Mist Apex Podcast, it's Matt Two Rumpets.
Oh, stop lying about that. You call us that because we look so unbelievably youthful for our age, unlike certain other people who were just talking.
That is really mean to say that Ryan looks old. He's only 19. I know you're not talking about these fair looks.
And that receding hairline, dare I mention it? I wouldn't mention that.
The camera is pointing down. It is purely the camera angle. I really need to grow a little comb over, get this going here. Hey, it's not bad. If I can get to 40 with most of my hair, I'll be happy. Who have you brought along as a teammate today, Matt?
I have brought along from Downforce Radio, the past master of disaster himself, Mr. Jake Sanson.
Thank you very much. I am going to use that forever, the past master of disaster. I'm happy with that. I can go for that to my grave. I'm rocking that forever.
Bit of a beef with you. It was the Downforce Radio Awards last night. I didn't get a call for most handsome podcast host on Downforce Radio.
You didn't, but then I didn't get the fattest commentator with a big waistband award either. So I think we've won in each end of the goal there.
Was it a success? Sorry, I couldn't make it. I'm not the master of my own destiny. I am unfortunately married. But was it
indeed?
Was it a drinky affair?
It was afterwards. Yeah, but it was a really good night. British touring car legend Anthony Reid joined us and gave a nice Q&A to the waiting fans. We had some good discussion about motor racing in particular. We nominated everybody for all sorts of awards. The International Racing Driver of the Year award did not go to Lewis Hamilton, unbelievably. He even missed out to Cal Crutchlow, but it was Josh Fylde, the TCR driver, who actually won. So well done to Josh, beating Lewis Hamilton. It's not the only one.
Ouch, too soon, too soon.
Too soon, too soon. Okay, fair enough.
And against Team Clock Dodgers is the rank favourites. I really do fancy these guys. This is a Goliath of a team.
And they really are rank.
Rigged.
No, it's not rigged. It's just they seem to have more talent on the face of it.
Rank favourites, and they really are rank.
Big. We have evidence.
That rustling is a genuine tinfoil hat in the background. It's Team Honey Badger with Team Captain, editor of Badger GP, Craig Norman. How's it going, Craig?
Great, thank you. I'm Team Captain. This is amazing. I've never had such an honour bestowed on me like this before.
I can see your face. I believe that this is a genuine honour. Who have you brought with you to fight against Team Clock Dodgers?
I've brought along the one and only tech man from Birmingham. It is Matt Somers Summerfield.
What an introduction.
That's brilliant. Summers, how's it going, man? First of all, I just want to say thank you very much for all the tech stuff and the tech content you've provided over the past year. I think you've made us legit in ways we couldn't have dreamed. So thank you very much, Summers.
No problem. Not a problem at all.
And thanks for never once, never one time have you talked to me like I'm stupid.
To your face.
I wouldn't dare to do that.
Okay, let's get this thing going. Okay, Ryan. The teams have got to nominate things they want to put into Room 10F1. What's the first category and who are we going to?
Well, we're going to start with category one, which is crashes. I'm going to go over to Jake. What have you got for this one?
Well, my crash that I would like to put into Room 10F1 is the Australian Grand Prix collision of 1994 between Damon Hill and Michael Schumacher.
Too soon. It still hurts. It still hurts.
Yeah, it really does. It really does. This one stings so badly, even 22 years later. This one still hurts. And I swear it has caused so much hatred and disgust and, you know, awfulness in Formula One that still festers two decades later.
Do you think that a lot of Michael Schumacher's reputation for being, you know, overly aggressive to the point of being a cheat, a lot of that hatred stemmed from that one event?
I don't think it started there, but I certainly think in terms of the way people view him, then yes, I think it does go back to that. Because if that was the only incident like that in Michael Schumacher's career, then I don't think it would have done so much. But because he got away with it, because he was allowed to win the 1994 World Championship in that fashion with nobody having a go at him, then he thought, well, I can get away with that, so I'll get away with lots of other things. So I'll drive into the side of Jacques Villeneuve and I might get away with that. Or I'll drive into the side of David Coulthard in Argentina in 98 and I might get away with that. Or I'll ram Rubens Barrichello into a pit wall at Budapest and I might get away with that. And it's because they never did anything,
yeah,
because they never decided to take action on something that was blatantly trying to rob Damon Hill out of the race, mug him off the road, because they did nothing. That has basically charactered, to be honest, the entirety of his career, because every incident similar to that since, he's always wondered, maybe, just maybe I could get away with that again. So I think it did kind of shape the entirety of Michael Schumacher's ruthless streak.
Okay, well, that sounds very convincing. But if we go over to the Honey Badgers, do any of them have a counterpoint? Because at this time, I'm all in.
As team captain, I nominate myself. For me, it takes two to tango when it comes to a crash. Damon Hill was equally involved in that one. He could have waited a long time before passing Michael Schumacher because he went off the road, came back on. I can't believe I'm saying this. He came back on and pushed himself too hard. He could have backed away, seen that Schumacher's car was damaged, and gone on to win the championship. But he went for that went for that gap there and then as a very rash move. And
okay,
you know,
so
it takes two to tango there.
Craig,
I see your point on that one. Well, sorry, I've got to come back in.
Do it,
at
man.
This point. I see your point on that one, but I'm going to give you two counter arguments to that point. First of those is the great Ayrton Senna line: if you don't go for a gap that exists, you're no longer a racing driver. That's the first one. The second one is something that he actually said in the interview afterwards, is that he didn't see that Schumacher had hit the wall. And if he had seen that Schumacher had hit the wall, then he would not have gone for it in that instance, because he would have obviously assumed, well, you hit it at that angle, the car's going to be damaged, so I will get my chance later. And he said in the interview afterwards, you know, that could be the one opportunity I will get in the entire motor race to get past him. So in that instance, you kind of have to go for it. And he did have enough room to go for it, but Schumacher decided to make sure he didn't have enough room and just take him out in the first place. So I can understand why Damon went for that move, considering he only had 50% of the facts. You've got 3 seconds to make that decision. I don't think that was Damon's fault entirely, to be honest. He was a racing driver. What more could he have done?
Hannah Hassel in the chat room says, oh, for God's sake, that Senna quote isn't appropriate in every single argument.
But it is in this one. It is in this one, darn you. It is.
Luminosity 871 says, you can still be a racing driver and wait for a safer gap. Matt Graff says, yes and yes. I think that's equal.
That's how other accidents happen.
Yeah, it's equal parts Schumi and Hill. It is an iconic quote, but yeah, taking it literally every time would be fantastic. I have to say, at this point though, whatever happens, Craig gets a point in this round, because I could see how much it hurt him to defend that situation from the opposite point of view. So, you know, hats
off. I felt
off.
Like I sold my soul right there.
And you did. But if it gets a point, I think it's worth it. So before we go to Ryan to decide whether this goes into room 10F1, what I will say is, unfortunately, Jake, I'm going to argue against you, because although I agree with every point you said, that event took away my innocence of sporting integrity. That was one of the first things as a kid, I must have been 13 at the time, where something was so blatantly unfair for a guy we were all rooting for. We were all rooting for Damon Hill in England. And that happened, and it was so obviously out-and-out cheating. And then nothing was done. And it removed my sporting innocence about sportsmanship and stuff like that. And it caused me a lot of pain. And to quote Bernard from Westworld, that pain is all I have left.
Well, it's interesting, yeah, because the thing that I think I feel the most pain about that whole incident is not only the fact that he tried it and got away with it and won the championship, but this was only a few weeks after he had already been found wanting through his team's actions, taking the filter off the fuel at Germany, and obviously the whole thing going up in flames for Jos Verstappen, the almost guaranteed illegality of the traction control system. They just couldn't prove when it was being used. So because they couldn't prove it, they couldn't do anything about it. It was just yet another sense that, oh, well, we got away with that one, so now we can do anything. And again, they got away with it. It was just so many things. If it was just that one incident, then I might be a little bit tolerant about it. But all the way through that season, there were just incidents of, well, Benetton got away with it. Yes, Schumacher did get penalized for two races and docked because of overtaking the black flag twice.
Okay, so we're going to go to Matt, and unfortunately, mental. You've already lost a point for tangenting way too far. That's unlucky. I mean, I don't write the rules. I just make them up as going.
Yes, you do. You write the rules, and you're using them to punish us. You
terribly
agree with
sorry.
Everything we say, and you give the other team a point. This makes
I'm sorry,
no
Trumpets.
Sense.
Once
it's
again,
absolutely rigged. But that's not what I wanted to say. I wanted to say, just, correct me if I'm wrong here, Jake, but in your initial presentation, and now I'll admit I am not the most at all times perceptive of people, but I might have noticed a little bit of a pattern that you were putting together there.
What was
the pattern? About following incidents in Schumacher.
Yeah, absolutely.
Your argument is that it's bigger than just this. It's bigger than just what these people are whining about on the other side of this.
Absolutely.
It's a much larger problem that we're trying to nip in the bud here.
I've just got to say, the whole argument here is based on one thing, and that's the 94 incident. But then Jake's thrown everything in since then. So, which incident we actually talking about?
To clarify here, we're talking about the 94 Australian incident, because the very fact that he got away with it meant he could pretty much feel like he could do what he wanted after that, and caused so many other incidents as a result of that. So the showdown between him and Villeneuve in 97 would never have happened.
Don't list them again. Don't list them all again. Jesus, let's go.
I'm just making that as a single point. No, I'm not going to list them all again. I don't want us to lose another point for going off a tangent. But I'm just
too late.
A basic example, you know, Barrichello would nearly not have been killed.
Cease and desist. You have made your case. Now let us go to the gatekeeper. Ryan, what have you made of the arguments, and will you submit this to Room 10F1?
Well, I believe Jake's put up a good argument, and I think that that incident could have potentially put that as partially ruining Damon's career, because if he'd have got another title, then he wouldn't have found himself at Arrows and Jordan. He'd carried on with Williams or another championship-winning team. And also, you know, you've got to feel sorry for Damon, because obviously he's British. And then also he was carrying the flag for the team ever since Ayrton was killed earlier on in the year. So I think everyone really wanted Williams to get that win that year, but it was taken away from him. So I believe it is going into Room 10F1.
Yeah!
That's it!
Yes!
And with that, you've come out of the negative onto 1 point. Ryan, who should we go to next?
Can I just say, that's the hardest thing I've ever had to argue against in my life.
But it was worth the victory. Yes.
That hurt so much. But I scored a point for it, so it's fine.
Okay, we're now on to category two, and that is Craig. We gave you media. What have you got for that?
Cast your minds back, fellow listeners, to a time before Sky Sports F1. And then when that was introduced and that was brought in, there was many different things they wanted to bring into the world of Formula One that they wanted the fans to interact with, and one of them was hashtag Ask Crofty.
Ooh.
The reaction says it alone. Ooh. If anyone is not familiar with it, and if you're on Twitter, you will be familiar with it, and 90% of you would have blocked it by now, it is a spamming exercise by Sky in order to get opinions from fellow fans. And now, for the first few weeks in 2012, it was good. It was beautiful. There was rationalised conversation over 140 characters or less. There were several retweets of really interesting points. And as the years have gone on, those interesting points have disappeared. And it's turned into a cesspool of the Luminati, as I like to call them. The fans that think Lewis Hamilton is hard done by. Spanish is the president and chairman and treasurer.
It's all a conspiracy. It's a stage. It's been staged.
And for some reason, these points that they make, which seem so bizarre, are retweeted onto the Sky Sports F1 Twitter feed and are shown to millions, or 138,000, or whatever it is now. And these opinions are just, they just don't need the light of day. And it's, I'm always on Twitter because I'm always running the Badger GP feed, at Badger GP. And it's something that really frustrates me when I want to see what Sky Sports are reporting on, because anything could break in the last hour, and instead they get David Croft, who, on a side note, is probably a really enthusiastic member of the Sky Sports team and should be down in the pit lane championing a boring race.
He's a proper pro.
He is, exactly. And, you know, he does use Twitter a lot to get his facts and figures, but that's another story. but he's enthusiastic, and it comes across as infectious, but you don't want to lock him in a room for 90 minutes after a race with an old laptop.
Okay, so let's be clear. You're not consigning David Croft, F1 commentator, to Room 10F1. You're talking about the segment Ask Crofty. And I've got a lot of sympathy, I have to say, because they seem to pick the most aggressive questions to retweet to him. And as a perfectly rational and reasonable man, he's got no real option but to keep just batting away these very extreme points with a more moderate position. And it makes for an incredibly tiresome format. So does anybody from Clock Dodgers have a counter argument, Matt or Jake?
Everybody's allowed their say in Formula One. No, I can't even go with that as a no.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but it sounds like you're kvetching endlessly because the weight of popular opinion is against you.
Yes.
Matt, you're the tech man. What word did he just use there?
Kvetching.
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 All right, Gesundheit.
So Matt and Jake, no.
It's important to allow social media the chance to have their say, no matter how ridiculous. Yeah, but you can stupid and asinine it is.
You have to get the facts right though, and that's one thing that I caught Crofty out on in 2014 on Ask Crofty, because he was perpetuating a rumor that Mercedes were the only ones with a Mercedes power unit that had the split turbo, and it was completely incorrect. And obviously I had to go on record to put him in the right. So, you know, even somebody in Crofty's position should really have the facts in place.
To counter argument then, it's really exciting to see Sky basically looking at an interesting and unique way to spice up the action if we've had a particularly boring Spanish Grand Prix. So afterwards, we basically have to have some interaction with people who basically believe they are in the right, despite the fact that most of them have never even been in a Formula One paddock before. That's irrelevant. They have to have their views heard, and it does spice things up a little bit post-race, particularly if the race has been boring. That is my counter-argument, and I hope it's worth a point. It probably isn't, though.
I mean, essentially, what you're complaining about is that the weight of opinion on Twitter goes a certain direction. Whether or not their facts are correct is kind of irrelevant. The point of the thing is the discussion with the fans. And of course, they're going to pick aggressive and wrong sounding things so that they can explain the differences and they can generate more discussion. So it sounds like what you're really complaining about is that they're doing a job, but that you already knew the answer. So you don't want to have to sit through it. I don't think this segment is just aimed at people with that level of knowledge. It's aimed at your larger fan base.
My closing line will be the fact that David Croft is a lovely man, really genuine bloke, but for 90 minutes after the race, he's locked in a cupboard and he looks so sad, especially when they cut to him, tapping away with his headphones on in front of some old Windows laptop that's been hurriedly brought along for him to sit there. And while Martin Brundle sortens out and gets to chat with Damon Hill and Johnny Herbert and things like that, I just think
suggesting he should be given
a... 4 years later, he needs to get out of that commentary booth a little bit earlier.
Okay, so the chat room is saying that actually David Croft has control of the Sky Twitter account during that segment, so presumably he picks the questions he wants. But I'd imagine that most of that hashtag is filled with, you know, he's probably picked the most tame of that line, so that's fair enough. The chat room saying it's to make Sky F1 look good. Ryan, it is time to decide. You've heard the arguments. Are we submitting Ask Crofty to Room 10 F1?
Well, as there hasn't really been much in the way of an opposing argument, and also I do find that it is most of the people that put something on Twitter for Ask Crofty generally wear tinfoil hats. I think, yes, it's going in Room 10F1.
Oh, celebrations. Okay. That's 3 points for Honey Badgers, which moves them on to
Hey, wait a minute. How come they get 3 points and we only get one?
No, that's a good point.
No, well, you had
lost. I must bring this up.
Because Jake rambled a lot and got minus points.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, he went off on a massive tangent, and I took away points out of frustration. Look, I don't.
It just
make...
sounds like you want to give David Croft a MacBook anyway. You're going to get 3 points just for wanting him not to have a rubbish Windows computer in that cupboard. You just want to give him a new MacBook.
I don't.
You
make...
get 3 points for that.
Make the man smile. He's been doing it for 4 years. Make the man smile.
I don't make up the rules, Jake. I don't make up the rules, Ryan.
No, of course not.
Where are we going next, Ryan?
So we're now going on to category three. Summers, I believe that you have been given the category of tracks.
Oh, come on.
I have indeed. And my track that deserves to go into Room 10F1 is the barrier-lined bore fest that is the Monaco Grand Prix.
Yes!
Oh,
yes!
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 Between my eyes. The only time it's ever interesting is when there's a crash or when it rains. For me, Monaco is so boring. I, as an F1 fan, I really, really try every single time to get on board with Monaco, the Monaco Grand Prix. And obviously, there's plenty of tech updates available at Monaco. So that's the only thing that entertains me. By the time the race comes round, I really can't be bothered with it anymore.
Summers.
It just does not interest me.
Seriously, you would get rid of Monaco, which at least gives us great onboards from quali and interesting rain-filled races.
Absolutely.
From time to time, like this season, instead of something like Sochi,
What you've said there, basically, is you've said that the only time it's interesting is when there's a crash or when it rains. You could say that about Barcelona. You could say that about Hockenheim. You could even say that about Monza. Yes. Now, represent. I'm sorry, that's ridiculous to put Monte Carlo into that category for that reason, because you could say that about half the current Formula One circuits based under the current rules. It's a ridiculous statement.
The difference is in Barcelona, you go above 70 miles an hour. Monaco is ridiculous. F1 outgrew Monaco about 50 years ago.
That's exactly my point. Under the current track regulations, Monaco would never exist. It is simply not fit for purpose anymore. For me, it is just not a Grand Prix that.
Yeah, you've said it wouldn't exist under the current regulations. That's fine. And what a brilliant street circuit we've got now under the current regulations in Baku. Oh no, wait a minute. That's a stupid thing to say. No, it's awful.
I think that's a bit of a poor way of looking at Baku. We went there. We've been there once so far, and yes, the race
was good. There's a corner the width of a bicycle.
But look at the GP2 races that happened at Baku. Yeah, they were fantastic races. So you can't isolate it just.
Well, but I mean, come on, the GP2 races are generally always better than the F1
exactly.
races. I think we can just see that point. That's hardly a measuring stick. By that measure, we should all go to just Macau every time.
Wait a minute.
That wouldn't be a bad idea anyway.
Monaco made Formula E boring. Let's not pretend that Monaco is in the same place as Barcelona and Baku. Baku, where you've got the fastest point of Formula One cars, that is a spectacle of Formula One, and you've got a nice twisty bit, but Monaco is ridiculous. You could have a completely different spec car for Monaco. It is so out of kilter with the rest of the season. But I will say that you are being invited onto a yacht in the chat room, Summers, so I would get in there. That's Darren Johnson, and people are saying Monaco had Bieber. Enough said. I'm assuming that's a positive thing.
I'm just going to go there. It's worth it for the wet races. What race featured the best battle for position one this year? Oh, I'm sorry. Was that Monaco you said?
I'm bored of it.
Me too.
It's the same thing every year. It's built up every year to be this amazing venue. And I've been there and it's grubby and horrible and closely compacted and full of money that... You know, it's a tax haven. It's this place where it is the archetypal Bernie Eccleston track. He went there for the money and he got there. It is a time trial track. If you get a good lap in on a Saturday and it's a dry race on Sunday, you're guaranteed to be where you finish. If it's a wet race, yes, you could have a good race there. But the current regulations don't lend to that. You can't fill your petrol tank up to the brim and fight your way through like Panis did anymore. You can't not pit stop anymore like Mika Salo did in 97. It's so many things wrong with it. It's so... If you're going to watch it for the onboards and be like, wow, that's great, then just pick a qualifying session and have it on your phone or your laptop and have it, watch it constantly. Just don't keep telling me that Monaco is this jewel in the crown, because it's not. It's old, it's tired, get rid of it.
Jake, point of order, mate. I'm going to have to edit this out. I am holding up this post-it note that says TR on it. So that's a point of order. If I specifically want it to go to one person next, I've identified that they've been waiting for a little while. That's
fine. So angry.
And look. I even stacked it there. So TR followed by Jake, followed by Ryan. All right.
Go on, Matt.
Trumpets.
Right. So first of all, it sounds like you're just complaining about the advertising, not the actual track. So let's be very clear about this. And second of all, it appears the chat room is entirely on our side. Is Hannah Hassel has jumped in with, what about Senna's races? You wouldn't have that. And Ellis has joined in with, at Monaco, you wouldn't have had, quote, that lap from Senna in 88. I mean, I can't believe you would really kick this one out of the veritable bed for eating crackers, as it were.
Ooh, I like
absolutely.
It.
There are some great races from Monaco's history, some really, really great races. Amongst the awful ones there have been. There have also been some crackers. 84, you've got to look at that one as one of the best. 82, 92, 88, when that completely transformed with Senna hitting the wall. You've got 96 and 97, and to a certain degree, 98. That was not the easiest of victories for Häkkinen to pull off, to be fair. You've got so many other things that happened around it, and it isn't just the Formula One that makes that Grand Prix fantastic. It's everything that happens around it. Formula One needs to sell itself to the wider community. If you're going to bring new money into it, Monaco is the place to do that, not Baku.
Okay, point of order again. Lists of things won't necessarily secure arguments. Hannah Hassel has brought up an excellent point, which is we've had to resort to Senna. That's almost like F1's version, isn't it, of is it Godwin's Law, where you say, right, every argument resorts to Senna at some point. Ryan, Matt Summerfield has submitted Monaco as a track to go into room 10 F1. What say you?
Don't do it!
Well, I think if I was going to pick a track to go into room 10 F1, it would be Monza, but that's another story. But I have to completely disagree, purely because the amount of drama that's been at Monaco. You have the likes of, I can't remember what year off the top of my head, when no one wanted to finish the race. And we had the likes of James Hunt going, well, we've been standing around at the finish, but no one wants to win, and all that sort of stuff. And we had Pironi running out of fuel. Then we had the 84 race. There it was just wet weather, and it showed off Senna's amazingness. And then we had those awesome quali laps that we've seen from Senna, you know, going one-handed whilst changing gear, like in narrow streets. And then we had Mansell versus Senna, 92. It still gives me goosebumps and leaves me at the end of the seat every time I watch it. So for that reason,
oh, no.
I can't allow it past.
Yes! Oh, justice!
No! Yes! We win!
I'd already added the points to the scoreboard. That's shocking. I've had to take them off. Okay, then. And Darren Johnson says, Monaco is fine as long as the drivers go for gaps. And if you no longer... Oh, wait. Anyway, so... Ryan, where are we going? Where are we going next for the end of round one?
We're going on to category four now, which I believe is trumpets. And you had legislation as your topic. So what have you got for us, trumpets?
Well, this was possibly the easiest question I have ever been asked, because if there was a single piece of legislation that should never have happened, it was the 1997 Concorde Agreement.
Oh, God, objection. I'm bored. I'm already bored. I'm pre-bored.
Bored already.
I don't know how I'm going to argue against this. I'm just going to fall asleep.
Which just makes me even more clever than I already am, which was pretty clever to begin with. It's really simple. There are lots of different things I could bring up. But in a nutshell, up until 1997, all of the commercial interests in Formula One devolved directly to the teams. And with that 1997 agreement signed by most of the teams and Max Mosley, Bernard Eccleston's friends, and Mr. Eccleston himself, the commercial rights holder became a middleman through which all of the money flowed. And everyone thought it was brilliant at first because they made millions. But what you need to point out is that Eccleston made billions with a B, money that would have gone directly to the teams. And it was the beginning of the end for Formula One as everyone knew it.
I move that we all just agree.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, everything that Trumpets has said, you know, the last 20 years, everything that's been wrong with the last 20 years of Formula One have been from that one incident. There is no better argument than that.
And he's your teammate, isn't he? So, Honey Badgers,
yeah.
is there any objection? Is anyone still awake?
Well, I nearly fell asleep.
Now you know how we feel during tech time.
Ooh.
Somebody got some cream, because I think I've just got burnt.
Okay,
here's some salt for your wound.
Deliver your counter
to Sebastian Vettel and say, Matt, can you ask the question again, please?
Summers, what was your counter?
My only counter to that is it's based on economics. At the end of the day, the teams, obviously, you're saying would have got that money irrespective, but it needed Bernie to make these deals. So if he hadn't have made the deals that were worth the billions, then the teams may have only got a small proportion anyway. So if we're talking about money, then it depends on how much money the teams were prepared to take.
Wow.
Well, what? That's a fair enough point, except for Bernie had already been running it on behalf of the teams. With this contract, he began to run it on behalf of himself.
Yeah.
And that was the death knell for the teams being able to support themselves, because they began to take a bigger and bigger and bigger cut, because there was now a middleman where previously it was the teams and the FIA.
Yeah. What he said.
Okay. I'm going to cut this short. I'm going to go to Ryan. Ryan, no one will judge you if you just say yes or no, but what is your verdict?
I'm going to say, as I feel somewhat still confused at the end of this,
it doesn't matter.
I believe that the I believe that the point has not been given correctly or well enough.
Yeah,
therefore,
I agree.
It shall not pass the gate.
You are insane!
How dare you!
Unfortunately, Team Clock Dodgers do lose a point for questioning the gatekeeper.
It's like saying Hitler opinions differ. What the hell?
Craig Norman, last word, and then we're
trumpets. Trumpets, we may be going down on a sinking ship here.
Yes, but we're right.
If you're
cannot get it anymore, Captain.
It's amazing that I won a point falling asleep there.
Yeah, well done. I don't make up the rules. Okay, so we are going on to a quiz now. Well, I just make a note to delete most of that last section. Delete all. Okay, so we're going for a quiz. Here we go. This is round one of the quiz. Okay, in round one of the quiz, I am going to ask Ryan a question. He will get it wrong. Ryan isn't very good at answering questions. The team will tell me whether they think the real answer is higher or lower. Ryan, are you ready?
I think so.
China had the most overtakes of the 2016 season. How many overtakes were there?
It's F1, so probably like 12.
Wrong. Honey Badgers, higher or lower?
Team who?
Honey Badgers, that's Craig and Summers.
Higher.
It's higher than 12. Yes, Ryan, you basically ruined this. Clock Dodgers, I assume you also think higher.
Yeah, a lot higher.
A lot.
Okay, good. You both get a point. It was 128. Ryan, the fewest overtakes of the season was Hungary with how many overtakes?
I'm going to go with 40.
40. Wrong. Higher or lower? Craig Norman of Honey Badger.
My heart says higher. Matt, what do you think?
I'll go higher, yeah.
Yeah, higher.
Okay, Clock Dodgers, higher or lower?
Trumpets, what do you think? Lower? I think it might be just a little bit lower. A little bit lower.
Well, I look at it this way. If we go higher, we either get 0 points or the same points as them.
Good point, yeah. Wow, higher, okay. Higher.
Yes, and you are both wrong, because it was 10. So
there's
only 10. Trumpets!
Can you believe that? There was only 10 overtakes in Hungary. That's shocking, isn't it?
Good Lord.
Okay, Ryan, how many grid penalties did Fernando Alonso accrue this year, as in how many places on the grid?
Was it 55?
Wrong! I can't believe you've got none right so far, Ryan. Despicable performance. Honey Badgers.
What did you say?
55.
Sure is inquiry in one race or across the season?
Across the season. Honey Badgers, then. Higher. You volunteered to go first.
Higher.
Higher. And Clock Dodgers?
It's definitely higher, isn't it?
Yes, definitely it is higher with 105 grid penalties.
He basically started every Grand Prix this year in Formula 3, didn't he? It's ridiculous.
Pretty much. Okay, a few more questions left. Ryan, how many times did Valtteri Bottas out-qualify Felipe Massa in 2016?
Ooh, that's a toughie. I'm going to go with there are 20 rounds in the season, so I'm going to go something like 15.
15, it's not a bad shout. I will give that away. You are there or thereabouts. Let's go for the Clock Dodgers. Jake, what do you think?
Matt, what do you reckon? Higher? That's probably lower, isn't it?
If anything, it's going to be lower.
I think it's lower.
Honey Badgers, are you going honey or honey? Are you going honey or lower? Are you going higher or lower?
Yeah, lower. I agree with Matt. We'll go lower.
all of you, in fact, this is the worst round of any quiz I've ever been a part of. You're all wrong. He outqualified Master 17 times out of 21 this
right?
season.
17?
It really was that big a gap. And we may of course, see Master this season. And I would imagine that young Mr. Stroll is going to look rather good in his first season of Formula One. Okay, last question. In his career, Ryan, how many races did Jenson Button start?
300 and... Is it going to be something like 315?
Well, it's a question I'm asking you. If you return that in the form of a question, it all breaks down.
I don't know. 315.
Higher or lower, Craig Norman?
Lower.
You agree, Summers? Lower? Okay, and let's go to the clock dodgers. What do you think? Higher or lower than 315?
I'm going to go lower because wasn't it 300 this year?
Yeah, lower. Yeah, go on, lower.
You both get a point. It is 305 race starts for Jenson Button. I don't mind going long this week as long as everybody's got enough time because the Room 10F1 format seems to have taken a little bit longer. So if anybody's pressed on time, do send me a message and we'll adapt around it. Let's go to round 5 of the Room 101 type format. Ryan, where are we going next?
We're going to Jake, and I believe we gave him people.
Yes, you did give me people. And I'm going to put Jean-Marie Balestre into Room 10F1. The reason being is that every single decision made by him in any way, shape or form during his tenure as the president of the FIA was completely and totally shambolic. Every single decision was basically made around his own ego, his own ends, what he could gain out of it, and about him basically looking bigger and better than everybody else. I basically believe he bullied Ayrton Senna and mollycoddled Alain Prost. And basically any driver he didn't like, he decided to try and make an example of. And that's not just Senna I'm talking about there as well. So it's not just a Senna argument here. It's many, many drivers who got on the wrong side of him. So I think Jean-Marie Balestre basically was a waste of space, time and energy in Formula One. Matt, what do you reckon on that? Come on, back me up here. Back me up.
Oh, no, I completely agree. Because again, let's go back to the FISA Folk War and let's talk about the fact that Balestre was in charge of FISA when they lost that war. And having lost that war, Eccleston was able to install Moseley as the fox in the hen house. And several years later, boom, there it is. Eccleston owns all of the commercial rights to Formula One and Moseley's in charge of the FIA. It has led to the current era of Mercedes and Red Bull dominance. It has led to the ignoring of the technical working groups, the ridiculous regulations, pretty much everything everyone hates about Formula One goes right back to that man.
Yeah, Balestre, get him out.
The chat room weighs in with Darren Johnson saying, I'm old and can't type fast. Insightful, if true. Is there a counterpoint from the opposing team?
I can't believe the leap Matt just made there between Jean-Marie Balestre in the 90s, the Red Bull Mercedes dominance in the 2000s. Yeah, that's exactly what happened. It was just one man. Formula One.
We want to win, damn it. We'll try any trick in the book.
You're really far behind.
Christopher's lackey, the scoundrel. He was friends with Bernie Eccleston and Bernie Eccleston owns Formula One. Wow, wow, wow. Unbelievable. Come on, there's more to it than that.
6 degrees of Balestre.
Oh, Trumpets, I'll open it to you to riposte. Savage takedown of your argument.
There is no takedown. You notice that they are just making fun of the idea that
absolutely,
the causality can be traced to one person.
Yeah.
Offering not a single refutation of any point I made.
No.
That
nothing.
Is rhetoric 101, but it is entirely free of content.
Yeah, they just had bullies in the playground here. It's ridiculous, isn't it? Just bullies
exactly.
in the playground.
Do you know, go check out.
We've got a good idea. It has to be shot down in flames like we're 5-year-olds. No, we've got a good point.
Do you know what? It's just
Matt,
nice to see
Matt,
some.
Get the tinfoil hat out. It's been a while. Get it out. Come on.
I think I'm going to leave it on from now on.
With Balestre. He is the archetypal villain in the Senna movie. He is the bad guy in the Senna movie because he put Prost in every... He was the one who favoured Prost over Senna.
It doesn't have anything to do with his favouring of Prost. It has to do with his inability to actually run FISA as a regulatory agency.
Correct.
And that's... You're completely misrepresenting our argument at this point.
Yeah.
Jake's... One of Jake's main points was... Balestra favored Prost. I was
meaning that he favored certain drivers. He was certain very drivers. Clear I that mentioned it was Prost not as, just Prost.
Yeah, I mentioned Prost as one of them, but Prost was not the only one he favored. He favored many drivers.
Okay, Ryan, what did you make of that episode of old men yelling about stuff?
I don't know.
It's the clouds.
Yep, they've not started. Well, they just started yelling about clouds, so we might have another episode coming up soon. But yes, I think Celeste, yeah, he is the villain in Senna. And I think had he not been in the Senna movie or part of it,
ooh,
then
good point,
it
good
just
point.
Wouldn't be the movie that it is.
No.
But having thought about it, you know, he didn't just wreck F1, he also wrecked rallying as well.
He did.
With the fact that a lot of people think that Group B was banned because it was dangerous, where the main reason was Celestra didn't like the fact that it was more popular than F1, so wanted to get rid of it. So the incident that happened with people getting killed was essentially the nail in the coffin. So I think, yes, Celestra is going in.
Oh, yeah. And Clog Dodgers get 3 points, which brings them to within 1 point of the likely winners of today's quiz.
So
Ryan,
thank you very much.
Ryan, we're going to round six. Round six, I believe. Who are we going to next?
We're going to Craig, and we gave him the task of coming up with something to do with memes.
Oh.
Okay. So, again, cast your mind back to the Sky era, or pre-Sky era, actually, where Formula One had some funny moments. Let's cast our minds back to Malaysia 2009. Everyone saw Kimi Raikkonen with an ice cream. Remember? Yes, 2009, where the rain brought a stop to the race, and Raikkonen said, "I'm not doing this anymore." Put some shorts on, had an ice cream. That was 2009. It's still being referenced now. Get over it, please. All this old jokes in Formula One that people are using to promote things is so boring. Stoffel Vandoorne picked number 2 as his race number for next season. Excellent. Stoffel Vandoorne, amazing talent. Great debut race this season in Bahrain. Scored a point from McLaren before Button and Alonso did. And he got number 2. And how did they bill it on all media outlets? Not bad for a number 2 driver. That was 6 years ago. Get over it. Please, come on, get over it.
Wait.
Still wear a t-shirt that says, "Leave me alone, I know what I'm doing," which Kimi Raikkonen said in 2012. Oh, throw it away. Use it to decorate or sleep in. Just don't wear it out. It's so sad.
Craig, are you nominating all F1 memes? Because that's the whole category.
No.
Are you pulling a Samson on us?
F1 memes that are still being used that are over 5 years old.
Oh, a time limit. Right. That's not bad, but I do feel that Ryan is going to look poorly on the fact that you've been very, very broad there. That's a lot of memes to fit in. Counterpoint from Clock Dodgers.
Right, I'm going to counteract. Basically, what you're trying to disagree with here is a joke that runs throughout Formula One for the entirety of, almost like an interesting or exciting phrase that we can no longer use on social media ever again after a certain point. Well, I take you to Murray Walker and his incredible one-liners. If we can't use Murray Walker one-liners in social media in any way, shape or form after a certain length of time, then there's no point living! There is no point in being a British fan of Formula One. You can't just take one exciting and entertaining line and say, "I don't want to see a meme ever again on this subject." There are too many fans, too many parts of the world. It's part of the fun of it. Just don't go on Twitter after a Grand Prix. That's what I recommend.
I don't do it. It's because of Ask Crofty.
Oh, good point.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, But getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
But yeah, no, you can't get rid of memes. They're hilarious.
I'm going to go with Craig a little bit here because especially the I know what I'm doing got pushed so far. And I think in F1, they guard the drivers so much that we actually get very few of these kind of things. And when we do get one, they milk it to death. There was even an advert with Kimi Raikkonen and they showed him, you know, trying to re-deliver his funny line to sell a product. And that was the most cringy thing I've seen in media
if you were trying to get rid of that one meme, I'd be on your side, but to do it with all of them, no.
Look at Jake is gaming Ryan here and suggesting that Craig has been too broad, and it's hard to argue with. Okay, let's fast forward this. Let's go to Ryan. Can we submit to room 10 F1 all F1 memes older than 5 years? It's a bold call. I think he's made a brave decision. Will it be rewarded?
Well, the thing is, if you're going to say like all the Murrayisms are going to go in with it, then you know, you would so you're now saying no to that. So,
I'm not saying Murrayisms because they're funny and they're informative and they're part.
You can make a meme out of Murrayisms.
Exactly, and they'd all be more than 5 years old.
I'd like to argue.
That's a different era of Formula One where it was fun.
Yeah,
and now it's like you drink decaf, and you have a shot of espresso.
But who judges? Mad. Who judges when it's fun?
Okay, so I'd like to just for once, I'm going to side with Team Honey
well
Badger.
Said, Mr.
I know that you know I've been very neutral throughout this, but I will agree with Craig that I think that Walker is pre memes or memes, whatever you want to say. They weren't around. They weren't around in the Walker era. And Craig, had you known how big of an idol Murray Walker is to Ryan Ferris, you would not have gone down that path. So Ryan, make your decision.
Well, I think Craig's just managed to save himself.
Ooh.
And I think, yes, having stuff, not the fact that it's got to be within certain years, but the stuff that some stuff is just used so much repetitively. Like, how many times do you see on Facebook or anything, I know what I'm doing and all that sort of stuff. So, yes, it's going in.
9 points. 9 points for Honey Badgers plays. 5 points for the Clock Dodgers. We have one more category in round two. Ryan?
One more category in round two. We've only just started. Oh, no, we've got two left in round two.
We have. I'm so sorry. You're right. You're absolutely right. Okay, sorry. Category seven.
Again, rigged. Rigged.
Okay.
You're trying to leave me out. I know what you're up to, Spanners. You fool no one with that.
Unfortunately, in the rules, it clearly states that shouting down the MC does lose you a point. So that's us. It's now 9-4. So, Ryan.
Shut up, trumpets!
Ryan, what's category seven?
Category seven is Summers, and we gave him the task of teams. Now, what have you managed to come up with that, Summers?
Well, for me, it is Ferrari's fall from grace since 2008, and I'm basically putting every Ferrari F1 car since 2009 into room F101 because they've had some very talented drivers in that period. We've had Fernando Alonso and Sebastian Vettel, Kimi Raikkonen. How many championships can we count up between those drivers? That is 7 world championships. And they cannot do anything in the last few years to compete with the other teams. I am putting Ferrari's cars since 2009 into room F101.
That is incredible. Is there anyone here with the guts to defend the terrible Ferraris? Matt Trumpets.
Go on, Matt.
Was it not Fernando Alonso stuck behind Petrov that denied them yet another world championship after that arbitrary date with which you have come up with? If you're going to consign anyone to that room, it would have to be Ferrari strategist. I would argue, and you have not made that choice, therefore you are wrong.
Let's clarify, actually. Are you talking about every Ferrari car or the team in that period, Summers?
Well, the category is teams, but as I know, I am a technical man. I'm talking about the cars, but the category is teams. So obviously I'm talking about the entire team.
Oh,
you said cars. Too late. Done, done, done. Can't change it now.
Yeah. I can't change the category either. I didn't pick it.
I'd like to point out that the cars from the last 3 years might have been considerably better if Ferrari had decided never to take back Kimi Raikkonen in the first place, because I do believe that if you want to beat Mercedes to the Constructors' Championship, what you need is two drivers who are capable of doing so, not one magnificent world champion and a guy who genuinely is taking home a paycheck and can't be bothered to do anything else. I'm sorry, I do feel that Ferrari are assassinating their own chances of competing with Mercedes over the course of an entire season by keeping Kimi Raikkonen. It's like flogging a dead horse. You need fresh talent, somebody like Sergio Perez to come in and actually do something worthwhile in that car. So I don't necessarily say it's the cars that are a fault. It's maybe people thinking perhaps Kimi is still okay. No, he's not. Get rid of him.
I'm not sure what side you're on, Jake. Craig.
Well, I was just going to say, so if the teams is the category and Ferrari's been nominated to go in there and Jake's just told us that the team is bad, then we win the point next round.
No, because what you determined was the cars were bad. The cars were okay.
Okay, so
they almost won the world championship after your arbitrary cutoff date. And then what about teams like Sauber, for example? You know, I mean, yeah, Sauber. Tangent, there, but for the grace of one Matt, race, yeah, but they were dead last this year.
Okay. Matt, where are you going with this? Okay. Matt, where are you going with this?
So, any place but Ferrari.
So my teammate, don't do this to me. Don't bring Sauber into an argument like this.
Any place but Ferrari. All we have to do is convince him Ferrari doesn't belong there, and we win.
Oh, okay.
Matt just brought Sauber to a Ferrari fight. Unbelievable.
I, I love this show.
Okay. So we're gonna pour some cold milk on this hot salsa here. I'm gonna side actually with Team Honey Badger. I know I've been neutral for most of it, but I am gonna side with Team Honey Badger here because that's the tinfoil hat coming back on. Because Ferrari have, if you're gonna consign a team to get rid of, and that's what we're talking about, a team to get rid of from F1 history. Ferrari is a team that has the money to do well. It has the personnel to do well. It has the draw and the appeal to do well. And it also takes most of the prize pot. So for me, getting rid of Ferrari is a positive step to bringing in equality financially and bringing... We don't need Ferrari. I honestly don't think we need Ferrari.
Nah,
Formula One's better off without Ferrari.
Now, hang on. Are you talking about getting rid of Ferrari forever throughout the whole history of Formula One? Because if you do that, you realize there is no Formula One.
Exactly. I'm sorry.
I think there are other cars in the races that Ferrari was in.
And no, there would be no Formula One because post-war, without Ferrari, Formula One does not continue.
Yeah, let's be fair to Matt. Let's be fair here. You're basically saying Formula One can't survive without Ferrari. Over 50% of the revenue generated from Formula One is Ferrari.
Okay.
End of discussion.
Okay, Ryan, now, it was team, the category, and Summers specified a time period. So I don't know if you're going to let that slide, that he specified a time period or not, because if you are, you can base it on... the arguments that have been put forward. If you're saying it's a team from the entire history, Matt and Jake have been pretty compelling.
Well, the thing is, it's supposedly the team, and Matt actually specified the cars. And I think they nearly won, during that time period, they nearly won the title twice with Fernando Alonso. And yes, if it was the strategist, they have had some monumental mess-ups during, well, this season alone. And but for the fact that it's the cars and not the team, I don't think it's going to go in.
Oh,
yeah!
So so unfortunately, then, Team Honey Badgers have to make do with only the 5-point lead they already have.
Charming.
What's round 8,
Which
Ryan?
Was entirely made up.
No, the scoring has been pretty consistent. The live stream has been watching it. I'm sure if there was any irregularities, they would have been brought up. So, Ryan, what's Category 8?
Now, Category 8 will be yet again another snorefest, as we gave Matt Trumpets the opportunity for organisation.
I don't rate your chances, Matt, but do crack on.
you know what's funny about this? You say pick three things that you would get rid of that would make Formula One better. I say the 1997 Concord Agreement, which is beyond argument. And then I go to the next thing, which would be the June 28th, 2000 approval by the FIA Senate of the deal granting the commercial rights.
Oh, dear Lord, kill
to
me.
To FOM for 100 years in return for $360 million, most of which was deferred payment.
This makes me want to watch motorbikes.
Now, if you go on social media and you see one complaint about Formula One today, what is it? Free-to-air television, the TV coverage is awful. Why is that? Well, there's one person who owns the rights for another, 86 years, and that's Bernard Eccleston. And if you really want to be technical about it, that vote was a continuation of the 95 agreement, where once again, and unbeknownst to everybody, Bernie substituted his company for all of the teams. That's right, folks. All of the teams could own all of the TV revenue right now, but Bernie substituted his own company and the FIA approved it not once, but twice, even though the teams themselves didn't know about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I say kick it out the door.
Yeah, correct. Because basically all of the teams in Formula One, all of them are getting the raw end of the deal. Everybody's complaining, well, Formula One only works the way it currently does because the rich guys win everything and the poor guys don't have a chance. That all dates back to that decision. You know, there were times when you could occasionally have a Jordan running at the front or a Stewart being competitive, running in the top three of a particular Grand Prix weekend. We just can't have that anymore. Teams like Toyota can come in and spend billions and billions of pounds, but because it's not working out in their particular way wording of the agreement, they can't do anything. No wonder they went, you know, 7 years, 8 years without a single F1 victory. The odds were stacked against them no matter how much money they threw at it. It's disgraceful how it's been handled. Correct. Get it out.
The chat room is saying, Trumpets, there is noise coming out of your face and none of us are interested. So that would be a good time to go to Ryan for his verdict.
What are you going to argue against it?
Oh, wow, really?
They don't want to argue against it. They know it's right.
Do we really have to drag this out further, Craig? Really? I mean, it's pretty much a shoo-in.
No, they know we're right. So, of course not.
Well, you know, we got to make it fair for them.
Okay,
you know.
Craig, say things. Save us.
No, that was quite a good snooze. They can have the points. That was a good cat nap.
I'd rather lose.
I'm sort of hoping he might wake himself up.
Ryan, give us your verdict.
Beating us to death.
Ryan, give us your verdict, Ryan.
I believe that, you know, back in the likes of the 80s and the 90s, we used to have the days when there were so many cars that not everyone will qualify because there were so many cars on the grid. And today we have, well, we're struggling to get the numbers purely because people are just struggling for the money and all that sort of stuff. And for that, it's going in.
Yeah!
Yeah!
Get in!
Yeah!
Being boring, yeah! Got points.
Wait, what? Ryan, this is not what we agreed, so I've got to give them 3 points now.
I told you!
It's rigged! I told you! Manners is against me.
Do brown paper envelopes mean nothing to you people whatsoever? Okay, right. Let's go then to round two of the quiz. It's quick fire. Team one is the Honey Badgers. Are you ready, team one?
Yes, born ready. Let's
go. Awesome. Okay, who completed the most overtaking moves in 2016?
Oh, come on.
Max Verstappen.
Well done. Jake, you lose a point for objecting to the severity of the quiz. It's just unlucky. It's the way it's worked out. Who scored? I don't make up the rules.
I refuse.
These rules were laid out beforehand. If you had every opportunity to complain. Question two. Who scored Manor's only points of the season?
Pascal Wehrlein.
Jake, it's not your team. So you've scored a point for Honey Badgers. Honey Badgers, who led the first dozen laps of the 2016 season?
Ooh. Matt? Oh, it's Rosberg, because Hamilton had a bad start, so it'll be Rosberg.
I challenge.
Go ahead, ask him what 1+1 is next.
I know the answer. Can I challenge?
You can. For no points, challenge.
It was Sebastian Vettel.
That's correct. No points. Okay.
No point.
Honey Badgers, how did Sebastian Vettel retire from the lead in Austria?
With grace and dignity.
Did he say honestly and shout about a man wearing a blue flag, waving a blue flag?
That's such a funny answer. I'm going to give you a point. But the true answer was it was a tyre blowout. Who won the honestly. Pole trophy? Who won the pole trophy in 2016?
Lewis Hamilton.
Lewis Hamilton, he did. That's a point for you. How many drivers contested the season in 2016?
22 plus Van Dorn plus Ocon, 24.
24, that's absolutely correct. That's an extra point for you. That puts you on to 14 points. Well done. End of your quickfire round. Team 2 is Matt and Jake for the Clog Dodgers.
Right, here we go.
Okay. In quantum physics, completely describe spooky action.
Get on with the proper questions.
Spooky action at
it's
a distance.
It's part of the rules. We got to give you hard
no,
questions.
No.
Okay, here's your real questions. Who crashed on the way to the grid in Brazil?
Oh, that was Romain Grosjean.
Yep.
Correct. Who scored Sauber's only points of the season?
Nasser? Was it Nasser?
It was trumpets, Felipe yeah. Nasser. Yes, I can see trumpets Nasser. Nodding there. Which team's drivers crashed into each other in Monaco, nearly ending up in the sea?
Trumpets. Give it a go.
Nearly ending in the sea has to be Sauber, I would guess.
Sauber, yeah.
Yes, that's true. Ericsson ploughed into Nasser at Raskas after Nasser refused team orders to let him by. That's a point to you. Where did Lewis Hamilton finish at Spa after starting at the back of the grid due to engine penalties?
Was it third?
Yeah, that's third. That's what my memory tells me.
Yeah, third.
Third place. You get a point there. Two questions left. Oh, who won? Seven. And by the way, you're 4 points behind. So who won the DHL Fastest Pit Stop Award?
Williams, right?
Williams.
Yeah.
Correct. You get a point. Unfortunately, my mouse isn't working, so I can't add that point. I hope I remember to do it later.
Cheater.
Where did Haas finish in the championship?
They were, was it ninth, Trumpets? Was it ninth they were? No, eighth. Eighth. They were eighth.
I was thinking seventh, but perhaps it's eighth. I don't know. I will go with you. You know more than me.
Eighth.
Eighth. Eighth. You do get a point and you've closed the gap.
Yes!
You've closed the gap to 3 points. Panel, is there anybody who's struggling on time? Because we've got one more wild card round and then the final round of quiz. Excellent. Let's move on to the...
I have a bonus question if someone wants it.
Do it.
I'm having a rash in my whiskey, but yes.
We want a bonus question to catch up.
Absolutely.
So this is for everyone on the panel, apart from Spanners.
Aw.
Which ex-F1 driver found themselves in a scuffle this weekend?
Olivier Panis.
Yep.
Oh. Balls ice racing with Romain Grosjean.
Oh.
Punch up.
I don't have Motors TV. Come on, that's not
Neither
exactly
Neither do I, but I have Facebook and Twitter.
That's not exactly fair. Oh, go on then, fair enough.
And as per the rules we laid out before, these bonus questions are worth 5 points each, so...
Ridiculous.
Ryan, okay, so we're into our wild card, Ryan, so why don't you tell us what order you want the people to give us their wild card submissions to Room 10F1.
Right, so Jake, what is your wild card submission?
Right, my wildcard submission to Room 10F1 is Flavio Briatore and every single part of Flavio Briatore's entire dealings with Formula One. The man is insane. There is no other word for it. I mean, he seems to believe that because he is an expert in the world of Formula One because of bringing Michael Schumacher into the sport and forgetting every other driver in some way, shape or form that he has ever worked alongside Schumacher while he's been running the teams he's been with or has even managed over the course of the years, that he is worthy of giving people his genuine opinion as to how F1 can be changed and made better when he can't even change his own face and look like a decent human being. I'm sorry, the man is absolutely insane. Everything he has ever done in Formula One, from forgetting the existence of Johnny Herbert in 1995 to ordering Piquet Jr. to crash into a wall at Singapore, the man is garbage to Formula One. Get him out.
I just have two words to add to that. Budgie smuggler.
Exactly.
I was just going to say, I'm happy to give up the points as long as that picture and every bit of evidence that it ever existed is burnt and then thrown into the room.
Oh,
In all fairness, when Jake went down the route of every part of Flavio Briatore, my mind went there.
Oh, I don't believe I've seen this picture, but I have seen the picture when he first had his Botox. And he's just got all the women around him.
Under no circumstances should you ever Google that, ever.
It's quite funny. The women around him in that picture of him Botox is like, so, you're Simon Cowell, right? It's just wrong. So many ways. Get him out.
My counter argument would be without Flavio Briatore, we don't have Alonso, you don't have Weber, you don't have Trulli. But then again, that picture with him and Donald Trump does push me the other way. So, yeah, throw him in.
Thank you.
This is a politics free zone because some people whose politics are wrong would get offended by that kind of thing.
It's nothing to do with his politics. I just think he's ugly.
So you're going to ban him from Formula One because he's ugly? That's a bit unfair, but yeah, get him out.
Oh, imagine poor Daniel Kvyat sitting at home listening to this. There's someone for everyone. There is someone for everyone, especially rich Formula One drivers. Ryan, give us your verdict. Should Jake's nomination make it into Room 10F1?
Well, you know, this has been a really tough one. I mean, no, it hasn't been a really tough one, you know. You know, it's just been, he's just ridiculous, to be honest. The pictures, the having Botox, so it's almost like he wants to erase everything that's already happened. So if I have Botox, then no one will recognize me. And he nearly got away with it, but yes, he is going in room 101.
Yes! 3 points, guys, it's getting really close. There's only 6 points now between the two teams. Who's your next wild card?
Hang on.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you actually look at the score, board, you'll find that the clock dodgers are actually leading by 12 and Spanners is upside down.
If you look at the live stream playback, which is on my Spanners, it's on Spanners Ready channel, spannersready.com/livestream, the link is there. You can see how the scoreboard has progressed fairly throughout the entirety of the show. Ryan, take some control. Who's next?
I believe it's Craig now. So what are you going for?
Okay, order in the room, please. Order in the room. I can see through all the pictures here on this Skype call that some of us are of a certain age and we remember 80s and 90s Formula One, yes?
Oh, yes, we do.
And we romanticise about it because it was a good era. It was a good era of Formula One. But I'm going to counteract the fact that we have put certain things on a pedestal, and if you go back and watch any race between the late 80s and the early 90s, they were so boring, it's unbelievable. If you look back at any, you could go on some popular video uploading websites and you could see, type in some names and things like that of races that you might want to watch. You could type in the year 1990, for example, and type any race from that year, or 89 or 88, and you would see two McLarens roar off into the distance and then two Ferraris behind them.
Yep.
And you'd get bored within half an hour and think, why was this ever any good? So, yes, it did bring out Senna, it did bring out Prost, it did bring out Mansell from that era, and they put in some great drives, but the races themselves were boring. So please stop telling me it's a golden era, because it's not. Well, it's probably a bronze era, or maybe a tin era, but it's not a golden era.
So to clarify, you're not putting that era of Formula One into Room 10F1. No. It's the romanticising of that period. And I have annoyed so many people this year by saying, yes, when people want gravel traps. Gravel traps ruined so many races in that time period. Now I've even annoyed you. Are you going to counter my argument that was with you? I was on your side.
No, it's fine. No, I completely agree. I just was thinking of examples of great racetracks that had golf bunkers put in aside alongside the great corners just to make sure safety was there. And then you watch the video of Senna flipping in Mexico and you're like, oh, yeah, actually, they're quite dangerous.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Jake, you look like a man ready for a counter-argument, the romanticising of that era of Formula One.
I have been a person who romanticises that era of Formula One, and not trying to side with you because I have to argue with you if I want the point. But I do understand your argument. But we have to romanticise about something from the purer racing element of Formula One to get it off what it currently is at the moment.
How was
that
purer?
So that we can make positive change.
How was that purer?
Well, I've always felt, and this is a controversial statement, that if we return to the same sort of car design format that we had from the 80s and 90s with the modern day safety infrastructures, we'd actually have a better sport all in all. So there is a reason why you romanticize about the 80s and 90s, because in terms of the visuals of the cars, they were stunning, way sexier, way more beautiful, way prettier than anything that we currently have on the Formula One grid. So you have to romanticize it because that is where the romance comes from.
Okay, we'll go to Chompitz in a second, but Jake, I will just say you're wrong. A, because beauty is subjective. My wife thinks I'm an attractive man, for goodness sake. But I think the modern F1 cars are a marvel of engineering. And when I look at them, that's what I see. And I see beauty in that function.
Yeah, but Spanners, I think you're beautiful too, so that argument doesn't work.
You made it weird. Trumpets, let's go Trumpets. Trumpets, please.
I can please. Go on, Trumpets.
I would just say more to the point. The issue is that you're trying to judge that era of Formula One by modern standards, and that's completely inappropriate. It needs to be judged for what it was at the time. At the time, it was not an international TV celebrity forum like it is now. It was not, we didn't have DRS to pass, we didn't have any of that stuff. It was a pure expression of motor racing and driving talent, the likes of which we've not really seen since. And it has to be appreciated for what it was rather than for what we'd like it to be in this modern era. I think it's completely inappropriate to judge it that way. And that's where the big mistake has been made.
Craig. If I follow that the argument, there's no way you can compare Senna with Hamilton like a lot of people do.
That is where you
fall down with that argument, because if you're saying that you need to say that it is a completely different era of racing, then you can't compare the champions like a lot of people do.
I would agree with you.
Yeah, I'd agree with you on that one.
I wouldn't make an argument. Each champion is their own person in their own machinery, and unless you're lucky enough to have them driving at the same time in the same machines, you know, comparisons are always a lot of speculative fun, but at the end of the day, that's all it is.
Okay, and let's treat Ryan like the jury here. Treat me like a wise, wizened old judge, as my years, experience, and drunken wisdom reflect. So I will guide the jury on this, which is to say that what Craig Norman is saying is that when people criticize the modern era, they use a lot of arguments from quiet in the pews. Trumpets, don't make...
Are you saying that Ryan's not smart enough to figure this out for himself?
Juries are smart. Juries are smart, and they...
I don't know
guidance.
How I feel about that, Ryan.
Okay,
keep a minus 1 point.
Trumpets, could you approach the bench, please? Okay, now you've approached the bench. Okay, unfortunately, yeah, I can't stand for that in the courtroom, so I am going to have to take a point.
Can
off.
You take a point away from Spanners for dragging this out to a long tangent?
Point from Spanners.
Okay, yes, we will take a point off me, and that will not help you whatsoever. Okay, so...
It's minus 1 point to Spanners.
Yeah, great. Ryan, what is your decision? We're talking about romanticising that era of Formula One, but I think we're talking about specifically when people use it as an argument to change things within modern Formula One. So what is your verdict?
Well, you know, I was born late 90s and so lived through the 2000s up to the current day of Formula One. And I find myself always romanticizing about the 90s and 80s purely because I'm a huge Senna fan and all that sort of stuff. No doubt that you guys probably romanticize about stuff like the 80s, 70s and 60s and all that sort of stuff. So I think the cars were at their most beautiful. You know, I don't have a MP48 McLaren up on my shelf for no reason. Therefore, I'm not putting that into room 101, room 10F1.
Yes!
Hello!
Oh, dear. So the gap remains at 7 points. Where do you want to go next, Ryan?
And to go to who have we not had? We've not had Summers, so I'm going to go for Summers now.
Okay, well, now we've spoken about the 80s and 90s, I'm going to come back to 2016 and something that really I want to really get rid of, and that is the podium shoey. Nothing is worse than a rank-smelling race shoe and some champagne for it to be drunk out of. That was a disgusting thing that just became something that we don't want to see. I just don't understand the reason for it in the first place. I know it wasn't started in F1, but for me, I just don't understand where the trend came from.
And it wasn't even champagne. It was sparkling white wine. It's not even the posh stuff. It's just it's just made to bad stuff made to taste worse.
I want to counter your argument because I think it's already gone. It kind of went out of fashion in the last three races. I haven't seen it on a podium in the last three Grand Prix, so it's already been and gone and done. So yeah, you wanted to see it disappear, the Shoei. You wanted to see it disappear, but it's already gone. So your argument doesn't really hold any water because that phase is gone and done. It's over. So we win that one.
Ellis in the chat room says, to be fair, the Shoei started in MotoGP. Rod DGNL says, agreed, the Shoei is overdone. And Hannah Hassel says, Danny Rick can do it if he wants.
Exactly. I think, and Spanners will approve of us on this and give us 5 points, what we should actually do is put MotoGP into room F101. That would make a lot more sense.
Oh, this is tough for me because, yes, no, well done.
That's absolutely. That's minus points, Jake.
I'm just trying to get in bed with Spanners here. That's all I'm doing.
Yeah, and had this been my...
I take it back.
Had this been my format, that would have gained you a point. I was ready to click a point, but Ryan overruled and you do lose one, unfortunately. So, Ryan, what is your verdict on the Shoei?
My verdict is that it is somewhat spruced up what has sometimes been a boring podium, especially if it involves Hamilton and Rosberg giving sort of somewhat robotic replies to the questions.
Yes.
So I think as it somewhat brought some sort of reasons to watch the podium, I'm not going to let it go past.
Ooh, it's
controversial. Come on, we must be in the lead now.
We have to be.
You are. To be fair, you're close. You are only 8 points behind now. It's all worked out. If you follow the chat room chat,
we put more things in the vault already.
There is still.
Spanners, this is the clunkiest rigging in Formula One history.
I feel like Nelson Piquet Jr. I've got to quit Downforce Radio for there to be any justice at all.
I can't believe I'm being accused of rigging here. This must be how the Mercedes social media feel, being accused constantly of rigging stuff. And so I have every sympathy for Mercedes now. I understand. Ryan, we still have one person left, one entry to room 10F1. And Ryan, may I take this opportunity to congratulate you on your excellent gatekeeperingness of room 10F1. All right, then. So let's go to trumpets then and find out your final submission to room 10F1.
Well, it's kind of simple. Back in 2013, we had exploding tires at Silverstone, and Pirelli got rid of them. I would not have done so, and my argument was originally going to be based on complicated technical premises, but then I realized the error of my way, and I will simply read you the following list. Australia, Raikkonen. Yes, that's right. Kimi Raikkonen could win races once upon a time. Lotus.
Don't remember.
Absolutely. Vettel. Alonso, Vettel, Alonso, Rosberg, Vettel, Rosberg, Vettel, Hamilton.
What is he on?
That's
about
the first 10 races. And then you know what Pirelli did? They changed the tires. And you know, from then on, it was Vettel's all the way down. So I would have gotten rid of that because that was the best season we had seen in ages up until they got rid of the tires. Period. End of story. Done.
I would like to defend Matt here and say that cost me £1,000. I had a fantastic bet on Lewis Hamilton winning the 2013 season, and Red Bull were struggling. They were struggling. And then that tyre choice came in, and I don't think Vettel lost another race. Jake?
I agree. Yeah, I totally agree. Every single person in the chat room that whinges on about Mercedes dominating or Red Bull dominating, you need to get behind this argument, because shame on Pirelli for basically giving fuel and ammunition to that particular scenario. 2013 could have been one of the greatest three-way showdowns in Formula One history.
It
Hamilton
really
versus Alonso versus Vettel, yeah, could have gone all really the way
could.
To the wire. But no, Pirelli decided, oh, it's just a little bit too interesting for our liking. We need to give Vettel even more of an ego than he's already got. So let him clean up the last nine races in a row.
Row.
He won.
Okay, so let's clarify.
Shameful.
Matt, let's
shameful.
Clarify. What are you putting into room 10F1? The decision to change the tire compound. Okay.
Wasn't the tire compound. It was the construction.
And also, the thing is, though, and I think Summers is going to have something to say, the fact is that I was there at Silverstone 2013. I was just in Sector 1 in the village, and the tyres were blowing coming out of that complex on the curbing, and that was the argument that was used to change the tires to make them harder to then give Red Bull a stiffer tire that didn't mess up their aerodynamic performance.
And God forbid you point out that that was like Bernie sprinklers only on steroids.
Summers?
Well, I'm in a difficult position here because I kind of agree with Matt.
Oh no!
Yes.
Let me put your mind at ease. You are many, many points ahead.
And that's why I know I can agree.
Okay, but good.
The whole crux of that scenario was not to be blamed at Pirelli's door. That was down to the fact that the teams were doing what we call tyre swapping.
Yes.
So they were designed to be run on the correct side of the car, and they were swapping those sides over, and that's what were causing the blowouts. And if the FIA had have had a backbone and then stopped the teams from tyre swapping and kept those tyres, we would have continued to have a fantastic season in 2013. But instead, we got the Vettel bore fest.
So I'd like to add to that point as team captain Honey Badger, is that any change that promotes safety, like stopping tyres from exploding and causing accidents, is a good change.
Ooh.
And it may have cost us a very exciting championship, but we've had some since. So let's all just put our hankies away and stop crying about it. And let's just make sure that safety comes first.
Okay.
Yeah, do you know what? It'd be great if we watched the swimming in the Olympics with them water wings. Yeah, that'd be great.
Hang on. The teams are running the tires on the wrong side and backwards. And if they'd fixed that, they never would have exploded in the first place.
Exactly.
Okay, well, Ryan, I mean, there's been some very good cases from Team Clock Dodgers, backed up by one of the Honey Badgers, Summers F1, technical expert in the field of Formula One. However, as Craig has pointed out, it's about safety. Do you hate safety, Ryan? Do you want people to die? Or will you be giving the points to Team Honey Badger?
Well, the thing is, there's safety, and then there is being like incredibly, I don't know, uptight about safety as well. It's just like the Halo, but that's another thing to go into room 10F1. But the tyre situation, yes, they changed. They were doing the tyre swapping. They were also running them at dangerously low tyre pressures as well. I think that Pirelli should have just said, yes, you need to put the tyre pressures up and stop swapping them over, and we'll carry on the season. Therefore, Matt, it's going in.
Yes. 3 points,
that's
man.
All three, Matt. Why? Nice one.
Boom.
Closes the gap.
And we're still winning.
To 5 points. It's only 5 points, though.
Because Spanners is cheating.
And there's eight questions left. And of those eight questions, it is a double points round. Oh, my goodness. A double points round.
Oh, dear.
Why did none of us put double points in?
If only someone else in Formula One had ever thought of double points to make the end of the show more interesting. I honestly don't know why no one's thought of it before. So we're going
as long as you don't have us with sprinklers, I will be okay with.
Can we have it as an elimination round as well, then?
Okay, so that nearly brings the show to an end, and it does bring to an end the first year of Missed Apex Podcast. We do have the final round after this, but before we go to the final round, I want to say thank you to Ryan Ferret-Ferris for putting the show together. Ryan, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter at ferret115. That is IT, not ET. You could probably find me commentating somewhere on Downforce Radio as well.
I've been at those places. It was interesting and fun. There was a lot of yelling. And Ryan, this is the most sober you've ever been for a podcast. And, you know, I don't like it.
Yeah, I know. I don't like it either. But there is a lack of gin in the house. So.
And how can I end the year without saying thank you to the absolute stalwart of all my podcasting, let alone Missed Apex Podcast, Matt Trumpets? You've been there all year and you've really helped us. Could not do this without you. Thanks a lot, brah.
Oh, and likewise, it's been a pleasure, a genuine pleasure to participate in this.
There's something in my eye. Where can people find you on the internet and buy stuff from you?
You can find me on the internet at MattPT55. And of course, you could always go and buy my wife's books at any Amazon ebook store near you.
You can find Amanda Weaver's links to her Amazon books on SpannersReady.com. I've put a link down there, Matt. Come on. How boss is that?
Thank you so much. It's brilliant, because then your wife has something to do while you're engaged in watching the Grand Prix.
and she'll want to hug and kiss you afterwards. How can we end the season without saying thank you very much to SpannersReady.com and Missed Apex Podcast's best friends on the internet ever, Downforce Radio? Jake, thank you so much for letting Missed Apex also be on your feed and for letting us do so much within the Missed Apex network, not just with us, but also with Lean Angle Podcast and E-Radio Show.
Well, we've loved having you on the network. It is the fastest and most entertaining Formula One show in radio. We absolutely love it, and we can't wait for 2017 if this is what you're going to give us every time. Bang, job done.
I want more. I want more, Jake. Tell us where people can find you, because you've got a new website for Downforce Radio as well.
We do, yes. We are at downforceradio.com. Yes, we have a .com website, and it's amazing. It's been running the last few weeks. It's going to be a great opportunity for people who have opinions in the world of motor racing to write them, send them into us. We'll publish them. We'll make you into journos. We'll make you into aficionados of motor racing. Your voice will get heard. All you have to do is find me on Twitter at Jake Sanson, or subscribe to us on Twitter as well at Downforce Radio.
And if you're not good enough to write for Downforce Radio, do consider coming over to SpannersReady.com. We will publish anything, like literally anything, at www.spannersready.com. Matt Summerfield, Summers F1, assistant technical editor at motorsport.com. When we got going, you were the one thing that made it. You gave us a foothold in legitimacy, and you've stuck with us all year. Can't thank you enough.
That's great, Spanners. Every show that we've done has been fantastic. So I'd just like to thank everybody that's been involved as well.
Oh no, he's done a speech. I think my impression of you is better than any impression I've done throughout the year.
Okay.
and to our newest friends on the internet and social media, Craig Norman, editor of Badger GP, long may this friendship continue, and looking forward to a Badger GP takeover of Missed Apex in the new year.
Thank you, Badger. Sorry, I can't get that out. Thank you, Spanners, for that. It's been an absolute pleasure to be involved in this podcast. It's been an absolute joy to listen to it every week when I've not been on as well. You and Matt put in a lot of hard work for this, and we thank you for that. And thank you for the invite.
And I must say, well done. Congratulations on your performance in this quiz. You've really dominated room 10F1. Not that it's decided or anything.
Of course not.
Okay, let's go to the final round. And Matt, for one last time of the year, you've ruined one of my bumpers.
But for very good purpose, in that you left out someone really important.
What, on this panel?
Yes.
Who?
Chat room. Oh. Yeah.
Of course, it goes without saying. There are a few guys that have been with us on the Ustream, of which we are very, very grateful. Since we went to YouTube, Matt, though, we've seen a big uptake in participation for the chat room. And for that, I am really, really optimistic for 2017. For this as a live media event.
Absolutely. And more to the point, they wish to award bonus points from the chat room, kind of like Formula E.
Oh, excellent. Okay, let's go for it.
Right. Well, they'll have to vote now, but they simply threw up the possibility of them.
Okay, then. So if you want to vote for Honey Badgers to get an extra 5 points, click yes in the chat room. If you want to vote for Clock Dodgers to get an extra 10 points, then go up to your browser until the X highlights red.
Fine. Oh, we're winning so far, Jake. 2 Clock Dodgers.
Okay, so
3 Clock Dodgers.
We're on the fan boost right now.
Absolutely. 4.
Let's make this fair. 3 points per question. It, big guns now. Jake, of which team are you on again? Clock Dodgers. Okay, for 3 points, do an impression of Lewis Hamilton when he found out his engine blew in Malaysia.
Oh, no.
That's not bad. Craig Norman, can you counter to steal?
No.
Nope, the 3 point. No, it was that wasn't good. The 3 points go to Clock Dodgers. Craig, this is your real question. You've heard the German national anthem 19 times out of 21 races this year. Sing it.
No, I can't do it. That would be offensive.
Okay, can anyone sing the German national anthem to steal the points?
I can tell you how it doesn't go.
Go for it. This is terrible podcasting. First time I've ever turned down the Skype call volume to speak over it, because that was awful.
No
points for that. Okay, question 3. Matthew Summerfield of summers.co.uk. Who should get in the sea?
Marcus Ericsson.
3 points. Well done. Matt Trumpet, do you remember a driver called Rio Haryanto?
Who?
Correct. That's 3 points to you.
But somehow I want to blame everything on him.
Jake, how many missed calls did Toto Wolff have from drivers on the day of Rosberg's retirement?
23.
That's close. It was 147, including three from Kamui Kobayashi. You can get half points for that. Oh, no, you can't know, because that brings you dangerously close to winning. Craig Norman of Badger GP and Honey Badger's team on this. Please, for 3 points, express Ferrari's tactical performance through the medium of dance while humming the Benny Hill theme music.
There we go.
That is absolutely correct.
That's the funniest thing I've seen this year.
Summers, the question for you is, complete this sentence. Track limits in 2016 were...
a shambles.
And Matt, finally, what is the quote I use to round off each show of Missed Apex Podcast?
Wounds heal, chicks dig scars, but glory lasts forever.
This has been Missed Apex. Oh my god, unbelievable! The final scores are in! It is insanely close! Honey Badgers have 22 points, and Clock Dodgers, it was a valiant effort. They fought their way back to 21 points. The unexpected winners, Honey Badgers!
Wait, you didn't award the chat room points.
What about the chat room bonus? Chat room bonus.
Unfortunately, already accounted for. That's in there. No. Congratulations, Craig and Summers. Well deserved.
Thanks very much.
Let them take that away from you. And
I tell you what we're not going to do. We're not going to drink champagne out of a shoe.
And I'll tell you what, the mere fact, if anyone's got any questions about the point scoring system or how that played out, the very fact that they won and got the most points makes them worthy champions.
Bye, Nico. We loved you.
2 hours to make that point. Worth it. Worth it.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.